Welcome to the ProWrestling.net All Access Daily Podcast for Tuesday, October 4th, 2016. I am Jason Powell, here with a full-length review of the WWE Raw show that took place in Los Angeles, California at Staples Center. We have a new women's champion, Sasha Banks, defeating Charlotte in the main event of WWE Raw. I really enjoyed the match, and I was really pleased with the way WWE handled this. They easily could have gone overboard and gloating about having a women's title match, main event the show, and started playing Stephanie McMahon videos to, you know, where she introduced the women's revolution and the women's championship and all of this different stuff. And even though I was worried about that, them taking that approach after watching the pre-show, because they did mention it was going to be in the main event repeatedly, and I'm like, okay, I mean, it was fine. They didn't go overboard there, but I didn't know if it was kind of setting up for WWE to take that approach on the main show. But they didn't, and it instead, by not taking that approach, by, you know, certainly acknowledging it, but not going overboard and patting themselves on the back, it came off like it should have. The women belong there. They didn't go overboard and make it seem like this was some sort of a spectacle and we should all be praising WWE for being so progressive. There was none of that. And the women delivered. One awkward spot with Charlotte that I recall in the match. I think Charlotte. We'll get to it. I just remember there was kind of one awkward spot, I think at ringside. But otherwise, just a really good match. And Sasha ends up coming away with the championship. They also did a bit where Bayley was responsible for taking out Dana Brooke prior to the match. Charlotte and Dana getting lippy with Bayley. And Bayley ended up getting physical with Dana Brooke after Charlotte had walked away. And so Dana was down holding her knee, and that's why she wasn't at ringside. But we'll work our way through this. I felt like this was a pretty solid edition of WWE Raw. They're making some tweaks, doing some different things with the entrances and things of that nature. I still continue to say, if they want to really give Raw the biggest advantage they possibly can, they would cut this back to 2 hours, but I don't see it happening. Michael Cole, Corey Graves, Byron Saxton were the broadcast team as usual. Roman Reigns comes out to a ton of boos, and you can play this game with Roman Reigns. Whenever he comes out for a promo, give yourself kind of just do an over-under on how long you think it will take before someone interrupts him, because it happens every time. They just don't trust him out there delivering a straight-up promo, it seems. Now, they did let him go back and forth this time with Lana, who did the interrupting, and he accused her, or accused Rusev of sending out his wife to do his business and things of that nature. And she was mad at him, ended up telling him to go to hell, which was, I guess, the setup line. Rusev eventually came out, and the idea was that Lana was challenging Reigns on Rusev's behalf to a U.S. title rematch. And we had Reigns just kind of smiling as Lana mocked him for, or complained, I should say, that he destroyed her wedding celebration. She said, "Wipe that smile off your face, you stupid boy." And then Reigns had some weird line about telling your husband, delivering your husband his Bulgarian bulge, and tell him to come out here and say it to my face. And this is when Rusev eventually, he came out. They brawled, and it was, he had Rusev getting the better of this, finally. And he had a big boot that knocked Reigns over the barricade. So Reigns disappears into the crowd, and then Rusev picks up the U.S. Championship and holds it above his head. And as Rusev was celebrating on the stage, because he and Lana went up there, all of a sudden Roman Reigns appeared behind him. So he went through the crowd and up the stage and behind Rusev and caught him there with the Superman punch. And then Reigns kind of, he took the title back, and he looked to the fans, and the fans booed him. And then Reigns said that if Lana wants him to go to hell, then he's taking both of them with him. And he announced that their match would take place inside Hell in a Cell. Decent segment. I guess the ongoing issue here is that while this is one of the only programs WWE has that feels like it's been around long enough to justify Hell in a Cell, it also feels pretty lopsided. I mean, it just feels like Reigns has dominated, and Rusev, yeah, he was managing to escape with his championship in the past, but now Reigns won the championship, and we're going to Hell in a Cell. I feel like it's already climaxed, and this is just kind of the blow-off match, and not in a, you know, there's, I still wish that Roman Reigns would have won the championship in this match. And I had a reader very astutely point out, well, this is supposed to be, if this is the blow-off, essentially, with Hell in a Cell, it should be the last match. And then Rusev is owed a rematch. And it was a fair point. The issue I took with it, and I think the reader, if I remember right, actually agreed with this mentality of just kind of giving me what he thinks WWE's logic is on this. I just say, let Reigns win, let Rusev and Reigns move on to different things, and then have Rusev bring that up. Or, you know, just something along, you know, at a later date, come back to it at some point, that he was never given his U.S. title rematch. Believe me, WWE has conveniently forgotten about title rematches in the past, and I just kind of feel like we already know what's going to happen because Roman just beat him for the U.S. championship. The other thing of note in here, Roman, the brief time he did get a chance to talk, was talking about his family history in the business, his bloodline, saying that he is the first member of the family to hold the U.S. championship. I'm sure it's a really a historic moment for the entire Samoan clan. I'm sure they all got together and celebrated the U.S. championship win. There was a time when that would have mattered, but the U.S. championship. And don't get me wrong. Hey, if Sami Zayn wins the U.S. championship, or just, you know, somebody that has never been the world champion before wins it, it feels like a big deal. It doesn't. It feels like a step back for Roman Reigns and just people who have been to the top and then they go win the secondary championship, especially with the sad state of the secondary championships right now. John Cena was an exception, but that I can't even say it felt like a big deal when he won it. It felt like a big deal because of the way that he defended it with the open challenges. And I'd like to see Reigns take that approach. I don't think it's going to happen. I'd also like to see Reigns turn heel, and there's certainly no signs of that taking place. But the broadcast team did point out that Mick Foley and Stephanie McMahon would need to make that match official, and they eventually did. And then we ended up with the video package setting up the cruiserweight match. It was, I thought it was going to be a championship match, and so I don't know if I heard it wrong last week or if they changed their minds and went with a non-title match between TJ Perkins and Brian Kendrick. But a good video package. They are trying to do more to tell the stories. It wasn't, it felt what we've seen in from some of these just, the Cruiserweight video package, they all kind of felt similar. And I think they were taken from the Cruiserweight Classic, that sort of thing. And they all just kind of had a similar feel to it. This was a little better, incorporating some of their more recent stuff as well. And so they did a good job with this, playing up just the history between the two as well. And then we went to a commercial break. When we came back, we ended up with Brian Kendrick defeating TJ Perkins by submission in a non-title match in 9 minutes, and he won with Captain's Hook. I did have to laugh. You had Cole talking. He just said, Kendrick spent a lot of time with TJ Perkins when he was in high school. It sounded really odd. Like, the idea was that Kendrick was the older guy, and he just kept meeting this TJ Perkins kid when he was in high school. Well, he did explain that he would pick him up from high school and take him to wrestling school. Still a little bit odd, but hey, that's Brian Kendrick, I guess. But it was fine. But the match itself was entertaining. It's a little surprising to see the new Cruiserweight champion already losing on Raw, but they have to set up this match, this rematch, somehow. So I assume at Hell in a Cell, it's going to be Perkins facing Kendrick for the Cruiserweight championship. They're both doing a good job. Perkins is working for me as kind of that, just the plucky young champion. He's not as young as he looks, but he comes off that way. And then you have Kendrick, just really he's the guy that's making this for me. And it's nothing against TJ Perkins. It's just that Kendrick is such a good heel, and we don't see enough of that in the Cruiserweight division thus far. I think we're starting to get there with Tony Nese, but Kendrick is really the personality of the division. And if you take him out of this, I'm sure they would have tried to slide somebody else in as a heel. But I don't know if they would have done as good of a job as Kendrick is. He's really shining in this role. And, I don't have a strong feeling about who I want to win. If they were to, if Perkins retains, cool. You build up the championship a little bit more by keeping it on the same guy. But if they feel like, no, Kendrick's the guy and they want to get the title on him for a long title reign, I'm not going to complain about that either. I just think Kendrick is just doing a phenomenal job. Then we went to a pre-taped Michael Cole sit-down interview with Seth Rollins, and this one was basically designed to get him over, establish him as an all-out babyface. It had mixed results because he said a doctor advised him not to appear in Los Angeles, but you know me. And then he complained that Kevin Owens was handed the Universal Championship by Triple H. Rollins said he feels he deserves a rematch. And he said people believe that Owens' rise to prominence is similar to his own rise. And he said he can see why. He did admit that he alienated a lot of people, and I like this, on the way up, and said they were sitting in a room with all of his friends. So it's kind of Seth against the world right now. And he said, Owens is the guy in the office who does half the work and gets a promotion. Good line. He complained again about Hunter handing him the championship. It's like, no, you don't get to complain about that. I'm sorry, given everything that you did. And he tried to explain that no one was there to hand him the belt when he cashed in Money in the Bank at WrestleMania and won. It's like, it's the ultimate shortcut. It's legal, but it's the ultimate shortcut. With two guys have been having the type of match that Roman Reigns and Brock Lesnar did, it's a hell of a shortcut for you to go in there and win. But I mean, even if you're out there going, no, but that's within the rules, so be it. It's the idea. But how many times did you see things happen with Hunter, Steph, just the authority manipulating things for him? He can't complain about this. It's just, it makes him sound like a crybaby. It makes him sound like a hypocrite to complain about Hunter handing him the championship. Cole ended up asking about Hunter replacing him with Kevin Owens, and Rollins said Owens is just a cog in the machine. He said his eyes are open now, and he's going to tear the machine apart, and it starts with Owens and the championship. And he said he had Owens beat a Clash of Champions, then restated his claim about Stephanie McMahon bringing out the referee at just the right time, the replacement ref. And he said that he knows how that game is played. And he said he will cancel the Kevin Owens show and prove to the world that he's still the man. So, some good here. Again, there were some good lines in there. I still wish there was kind of a rally cry for the fans. And I know it's, I think the idea has been, let the fans like the guy, like the heel. Don't kind of Steve Austin-like, where you don't want to tinker with the winning formula that's worked with him as a heel. Let's let the fans kind of gravitate toward him now that we're giving them some reasons to cheer him. Let's not change too much about Seth. I would actually, we're at the point where this, because he does come off hypocritical, if he just, I'm almost ready for him just to have some line about how, yeah, the fans were there with him when he came back from injury and he still didn't get it, where he takes the heat for that. And now, so just some way of acknowledging that he's ready for the fans to embrace him, and he regrets some of the way he's handled his business in the past. I don't think we're going to get that. This was a half step in the right direction. Better than we've seen. And I mean, the live crowd was hot for him. It may not matter. That's the thing. The approach they're taking with Seth right now, this character, I kind of get the feeling like, yeah, it's a little bit clunky right now, but as time goes on and he's established as a babyface more, even if he doesn't play to the fans, it just may take a little bit longer for everyone to get on board. But I do think that the vast majority of fans are going to get behind him. It's just, do you want to speed up that process, or do you want to kind of let it drag out a little bit until everyone gets on board? I think he's on his way, and they don't need to panic or anything, but they're just, little things I would like to see them do to kind of speed up that whole process. Second match was Braun Strowman beating a guy named Chase Silver. I just assume he was named after a credit card, because that is a credit card. But Braun, another destruction match. After the match, Saxton interviewed him in the ring and asked him what's next, and he said he is the gift of destruction, and his talent is being wasted. And he told Byron to tell Mick Foley that if he doesn't get him real competition next week, there may not be next week. And as I wrote last night in my live review, I didn't know how to take that. Is he saying he's going to attack Foley? There's no next week for Foley. He's going to jump to SmackDown, so there's no Strowman on Raw next week. Or somehow he has this ability just to make sure the world ends and there's no next week. I don't know. But they also gave Chase Silver an interview before the match, and he just talked about how he moved to Hollywood to make his dreams come true. Then after the match, or after this, we went to Charlotte and Sasha Hype for the main event. We got a shot of Sasha stretching backstage. Bayley showed up and played up Charlotte and Sasha being in the main event, and she said this was Trish and Lita territory. And Sasha said it's more than being in the main event. It's about taking back what she worked her entire career for. And Bayley said she can't think of a more deserving person than Sasha, who said she will dethrone the wannabe queen because she was born to be a champion. I like Sasha. I do. But, I mean, seriously, put yourself in the position of Bayley for a moment. You go in there and it's a friend but rival, and you praise her and you wish her luck, and all she does is talk about how great she is and how she was born to do this. Like, what makes Sasha a babyface? I don't know. I mean, aside from the fans like her. She had this strong following coming up from NXT. Most of that was when she was a heel. And again, it's kind of like I was saying with Seth Rollins. It may not matter because the fans are going to like who they like, and they definitely enjoy Sasha Banks right now. But it was kind of slow going, getting to the point where more and more fans would embrace her. And I think that's part of the reason why. She's just kind of rough around the edges for a babyface. She's very braggadocious for a babyface. And, it may work for her. That might be, the fans may not want her to be kissing their ass, and they kind of appreciate that. Just the boss character. We'll see. But then we got an ad for SmackDown tonight. Jake Barnett will have live coverage of that show for you guys. It'll be AJ Styles, John Cena, and Dean Ambrose having a face-to-face-to-face confrontation. No matches advertised yet. Then Michael Cole hype that the Royal Rumble is returning to the Alamo Dome in San Diego. Hey, that's what Cole said. He did correct himself and say San Antonio. I'm guessing he heard about that one through the headsets, but he seemed to have some fun with it. Then Kevin Owens made his entrance, and he was accompanied by Chris Jericho, who had his list clipboard. And the long story, because this was kind of a lengthy promo here, there was yet a moment where Chris Jericho came up with the idea. He said, they beat Enzo and Big Cass, and now he thinks they should challenge New Day for the tag titles. And then Owens saying, it sounds great, but Cesaro and Sheamus already have that tag title opportunity lined up. And Jericho said that Sheamus and Cesaro are not best friends like they are. And he said they could be a tag team and WWE Universal Champion at the same time. Owens wasn't so crazy about it. He's kind of, it sounds like a lot of work, and I got a lot on my plate. And then Jericho had the line. The key line here was that he's not, it's not like he's asking for a shot at Owens' championship. And then the crowd really popped for that, and that was very encouraging because that's obviously the direction they are heading in. Whether it is in time for Hell in a Cell and they go with Jericho and Rollins again facing Owens in a triple threat, or just some coming out of Hell in a Cell, they're clearly building to Chris Jericho and Kevin Owens splitting, and the fans reacting the way they did is great. I mean, Jericho bombed. I'm sorry, he bombed as a babyface in his last run. But he has been so much fun as a heel. The fans are definitely enjoying his act. He's the guy they love to hate. His list, the it thing, all of these different things that at times that there was some like the it thing. I'm just like, a little too corny, but it's worked as far as setting him up for this moment now, where he's about to become a babyface. I don't think they're going to have the issue of fans don't like the kind of cornball Chris Jericho they got when he returned. I think they're ready for this, and as long as he maintains a little bit of an edge, the fans are going to be behind him. I mean, they chanted Y2J loudly at Staples Center, and then. But the funny part was, so after Jericho says that it's not like he's asking for a title shot at the Universal Championship, suddenly Owens was interested in going after New Day. So Owens didn't like the idea of Jericho kind of teasing that he could be challenging him instead. And I hope they have some time with this. I'd like to see them be able to build up, build to this moment where you keep dropping hints and you keep playing this little game and you stay like they did last night. It was smart to have Owens be the guy who quickly just, oh yeah, we can go after the tag titles. He's happy with that. That's heelish. He's the one kind of he sees what the possibility is, and he's ducking Chris Jericho. And I like that. The more you do that, the more you're going to make the fans want to see Chris Jericho finally snap. The other way they can do this is go into the match with Jericho and Owens still claiming to be best friends, where Stephanie or Mick Foley books this match. And then, of course, the mystery is, are they actually going to stay together, or is Jericho going to turn on this guy and be his own man? My only concern there is if they do a triple threat, they're trying to get Seth Rollins over as a babyface. Are the fans going to be more focused on hoping that Chris Jericho wins than Seth Rollins? Will they like him more? Even if they approach this going in as they're still claiming to be best friends, will the fans be siding with Jericho? I don't know. New Day came out though, and New Day had a good segment here. It's been a while, but this was all pretty good. And there was a line in there about from Kevin Owens accusing them of putting the health of children around the world at risk by feeding them questionable cereal, which was funny coming from Kevin Owens, number one, and number two, because of Vince McMahon's past quote that I'll never forget. I don't remember the exact line, but I just remember his hatred of breakfast cereal, and just because of all the crap that's in it. And here he is selling Bootios all these years later. But they ended up setting up a match, and Wood said they would never beat New Day to become champions. Well, it wasn't a title match anyway, but we'll get to that. Then we had footage of Cesaro and Sheamus arguing as they arrived at the building earlier in the day. I think the idea was that they got lost and they were bickering over whose fault that was. And then we had Corey Graves hyping the women's main event. They showed we get some celebrities at ringside because they were in Los Angeles. Ryan Phillippe was shown. He is the star of the USA Network series Shooter that was supposed to debut early in the year and was going to be like SmackDown was going to lead into it. And USA Network very excited about it. Then there was, I know there was like a death on the scene, on the set or something with like a stunt gone wrong. I shouldn't, maybe not a death, but there was something pretty serious with a stunt gone wrong. Then, of course, just some of the shootings that have happened in real life, they decided to push this thing back. So it looks like they're getting ready to air this now. Michael Cole announced that Bill Goldberg will appear on ESPN on Wednesday night to discuss the WWE video game and his relationship with WWE. Interesting. Stay tuned on that one. You know, I mean, hey, every time he does an interview, he's asked about his relationship with WWE, and he kind of downplays it. But he's also made it clear he's interested in coming back for one more match if the terms are right. You know, he wants his, he'd like for his son to actually see him wrestle now that he's kind of reached an age where he's going to have, he's going to remember it. And so, I mean, Goldberg, Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania, I think, is a possibility. I think it's going to sell to the masses, but it's going to be one of those matches that doesn't really grab me. Just because I know there's history there, they can tell a good story, and maybe by the time they get there with Paul Heyman working his magic, it can be good. But yeah, I don't know. It's Brock Lesnar. He's the dominant one, and I know Goldberg's character at one time was, but they're going to have to work hard to convince people. At least, like I said, I think the masses will dig it. I don't know that I'm ever going to buy into the idea that as dominant as Goldberg was during his wrestling career, at this point he's going to come back and beat Brock Lesnar. It doesn't jump off the page to me, but I get it because I think it's going to look good on the marquee and it is going to sell some tickets and some WWE Network subscriptions. The third match was Sami Zayn defeating Titus O'Neil in 240. Titus was featured in a video for the grand opening of the Titus brand. He said it's taking over everything from fashion to music to movies. And then he closed by saying, making a wish. All right. The broadcast team acted like they had no idea what Titus brand is either. So I felt good. And Sami just put him away with a Luva kick. You'd think, like, if you're going to do something with Titus and kind of give him a character shift, you'd have him win. You'd have him beat someone. I'm not suggesting he should have beat Sami Zayn. Not at all. So I don't know where they're going with this, but it's some multimedia thing that, you know, the character's claiming, and we'll see. I'm just happy at this point that he's not feuding with Darren Young. I don't know that we've seen the last of it. They may try to heat it up again with the Titus brand, but God help us all if they do. Good luck. Backstage, Cesaro and Sheamus were it just sounds forced right now when they're bickering with one another, and it was about them getting lost, and then Mick Foley showed up, and he's kind of giving them a look like, what the hell, you guys? And he talked about how they should be bonding together on the road, and he said the two of them were good last week, but they weren't on the same page, and he encouraged them to go out there and prove him right. Win one for the Micker, is basically what he's saying. And then we had some footage of Luke Gallows and Karl Anderson and looking dominant in past matches. So they're still trying to build them up for something. I was surprised, though, when Corey Graves said, their eyes are totally on the tag titles. Like, what, they've lost how many matches now? I was all for, like, just go ahead and make the switch last week. But they're still going after the tag titles. Weird. They went to a commercial, and when they came back, Golden Truth made their entrance, and along with it, I think they've done this before. They had the kind of the karaoke thing going on with Truth's music and a little gold dust head instead of a bouncing ball that kind of bounces over to each lyric when it's time for the fans to sing it. And but the match itself was Luke Gallows and Karl Anderson beating R-Truth and Gold Dust in 320. I mean, it sounds good on paper. You know, all right, Anderson and Gallows go over. They actually gave Truth a near fall in this, and I'm sorry, but if you're showing me this footage of Anderson and Gallows just destroying people and looking dominant, and you're trying to get them over, I just don't like. I mean, it was the idea was that Truth gave Anderson a scissors kick and covered him, and it was going to be the pin, but Gallows had to break it up. I don't just make these guys look dominant. I don't know that you need to give Golden Truth a hope spot. I just don't, especially in a scenario like this. Owens and Jericho were walking together backstage when they encountered actors Ashton Kutcher and Danny Masterson. You may remember them from That 70s Show. You don't want to know them from The Ranch. I get a kick out of That 70s Show, big kick out of it. But The Ranch, not so good. Season 2 comes up on Friday. I tried. Maybe it's because I'm not a red stater, so I just don't understand. That was what Kutcher said when he was on commentary. One of the two talked about how it's kind of caters to people from red states, and people from the city may not understand it as well, or something like that. And so I'm sitting there going, I think you guys have convinced yourselves that the people who don't like it must fall into that category. And I think there's a lot of people who don't like it. It's just I was kind of surprised to see it coming back, and I don't know, maybe it'll get better. I don't know that I'm going to be given another chance because there's a lot of other good things on Netflix, like Luke Cage. I'm only a few episodes in. Don't spoil it. But they ended up bickering with Jericho and Owens backstage and mocking Jericho for losing to Fandango at WrestleMania, which Jericho denied. And then the idea is that Kutcher and Masterson are like brothers. They're not, and Owens and Jericho are not the best friends they claim to be. And Jericho said they're so close they could be Siamese twins. And Owens said That 70s Show would have been better with him and Jericho. And then he walked away. And Kutcher said he and Masterson would be watching their match with New Day at ringside. Well, wasn't really ringside because, well, the broadcast team's not there anymore. Enzo and Cass then did a segment with some women, some breast cancer survivors. So the WWE still working with Susan G. Komen, and I noticed, like, the ring rope, the middle rope was pink, and I think there was some signage, but they're not having the wrestlers go all out wearing pink, you know, all over their gear and things like that. It was kind of cool. You saw Enzo. I don't even know if he explained this. I'm guessing that he must have lost an aunt to this or had an aunt that at least battled it. Hopefully, it's just an aunt who battled breast cancer and won. But it said Aunt Ellen. Aunt on one side of his wrist tape and Ellen on the other. So he's paying tribute to someone here. Obviously his Aunt Ellen, but I don't know the circumstances. But yeah, they, you know, just put over the women as breast cancer survivors and said we'll get to know their stories throughout the month. And then they had a table with a, you know, pink veil kind of covering what was underneath, and it was women's replica championships. And they just said that the women are not soft, and the crowd was respectful, which is cool. And so, you know, a good segment. I'm not the biggest Susan G. Komen guy, considering some of the things that have come out about that charity. Certainly appreciate the idea in theory, and hopefully that charity is will change its ways, but and actually spend, you know, less money on their executives and things like that. But so not a big fan of it. But I did notice also the NFL. This was you know, with Breast Cancer Awareness Month here, the NFL usually has guys covered in pink from head to toe, basically. And I didn't see any of it on this weekend's football games. I don't recall there being major. Maybe I'm missing it, but maybe it'll kick in this weekend for some reason. Just kind of strange that we didn't see any of that over the weekend. Like watching the Vikings game last night, I don't remember seeing a bunch of pink on the field, and that's just kind of something the players do. And I remember reading an article a couple years ago about how the NFL was going to kind of pull back on that relationship with Susan G. Komen slowly but surely. And so I don't know if that's taken place. Anyway, I'm guessing you didn't come here for thoughts on Susan G. Komen. Let's get to the fifth match, which came up after commercial break. It was the team of Big E and Xavier Woods with Kofi in the corner. Remember, Kofi had that cut last week, so I don't know if that's why he wasn't working or if just, let's give Kofi the night off and let Xavier Woods get in there. But they ended up defeating the team of Chris Jericho and Kevin Owens in 16:20. This was a non-title match, and because Michael Cole always, whenever there's a non-title match, you can count on Michael Cole to tell us that the champion, you know, they can put themselves in, or the challengers could have a chance to put themselves in possible consideration for a title match, that sort of a thing. This one, yet New Day ended up winning when Seth Rollins came out. Jericho had the Lion Tamer on Woods, and they called it the Lion Tamer. It was not the Walls of Jericho. He applies that one to smaller wrestlers. He changed it up when he came to WWE, as he's written in his book, just because it was a little bit trickier on bigger opponents. So when he gets in there with a smaller opponent, he will bust that out once in a while, as he did here. But Rollins came to ringside. Jericho releases the hold, and then New Day hit the Midnight Hour on Jericho. And so that is how New Day go over. And Masterson and Kutcher, just kind of, you could tell, like, they're not paying close attention to WWE programming, clearly. And they seem like they had a little bit of fun with it, but yeah, I don't. I mean, I guess it's for WWE, you get Ashton Kutcher on the show. It would have meant more a few years ago, I think. Would have been bigger to get his wife on the show. Yeah, he's the guy who he married Meg from Family Guy, which may not sound good unless you know who Meg is, and then it sounds real, real good. Who does the voice for Meg? Then after the match, Rollins hit kind of a rough-looking pedigree on Chris Jericho, and Kevin Owens stood and watched this from the stage. Then Kutcher was there to point out that if that had been Masterson taking the move, he would have ran down there to help him. And then Cole thanked them and plugged their Netflix show. So yeah, just kind of pushing things forward. Now Jericho can question why Kevin Owens didn't come save him if they want to go in that direction, or at least make some attempt to. He just stood there and watched as Seth Rollins basically had his way with him. And then we went to Cole setting up a video recap of the opening segment. We had Tom Phillips interviewing Charlotte and Dana Brooke. Charlotte boasting about being genetically superior, and said she is the only reason Sasha's even in the main event on Raw. And Charlotte said she was born for these moments and would expose Sasha as the overachiever that she is, and then she would knock her off the pedestal that social media put her on. We got a brief Rich Swann video package, just kind of established him as a fun-loving guy who can go out there and do a bunch of crazy high spots, and they went to a commercial. They came back, and we saw the Los Angeles Rams was basically how they were identified. So I'm guessing it wasn't like Todd Gurley and maybe Tavon Austin. It's not like the Rams have a number of players who are household names. They'll get there because they're in Los Angeles now rather than St. Louis, but they've kind of been in rebuilding mode for a while. Aaron Donald's very good, and they're 3-1. They're playing really good football. I'm guessing these were kind of offensive linemen or just, not household names, and so they just kind of went with the Los Angeles Rams billing. And then they did show Josh Reddick of the Dodgers, and they had a graphic ready for his name. And then we had Stephanie McMahon scolding Seth Rollins for getting involved when he wasn't medically cleared, and Rollins said that Stephanie doesn't get to tell him what to do anymore. And I'm like, oh God, she's going to cut a promo on him about how she's still the boss, isn't she? Well, she didn't, and so that was nice. She recalled Rollins saying he's all alone, and then she said he's right. There's no shield or authority. And she said he won't last long, and he will find out that he is replaceable just like everybody else. And then Rollins said Triple H made the second worst decision of his life when he stabbed him in the back. And you could see this coming a mile away, but God, did the live crowd fall for it. Stephanie asked, what was the worst? She's like, I'll bite. What was the worst decision? Marrying you. And the crowd just, oh. I was kind of surprised because it was like, oh, as soon as he said second worst, I'm like, oh, Stephanie's the worst. But hey, whatever works. And then he said he will burn Raw to the ground and take Owens and Jericho with him. So he's talking about Jericho here. So yeah, there's a could be a three-way scenario coming up. And then Rollins walked away. And for some reason, they felt the need to just hold the camera there on Stephanie. And I think she was trying to make this like kind of scheming facial expression where she's trying to show you that she's a step ahead. They stayed there like longer than they usually do, and she was not holding the face well. It was not good. So I guess the idea is that the all-knowing Stephanie McMahon, even though Seth Rollins got the last word and walked off on her, she's a step ahead because she's Stephanie. You never get to get one up on Stephanie unless you're Vicky Guerrero and you're leaving the company. That's it. Then it was time for Tony Nese to defeat Rich Swann in 440. They did give Nese a little video package as well. He said maybe he should twerk like a second-rate Amber Rose. Said that all he hears about is how much everyone loves Swann, that kind of thing. The wrestlers did shake hands, so their Ring of Honor. And then you had Nese putting him away with a pump handle into a Michinoku driver, or as Graves called it, just as I would have, or whatever you call it, because he wasn't quite sure what the pump handle part. He wasn't sure what the move's name was. Now, I would say, and maybe they didn't, maybe there's a reason, but shouldn't they find out? I mean, if you see Tony Nese is on the show, or just someone you don't know on the show, shouldn't the broadcast team go out of their way to maybe reach out to that person before the match and, hey, what's your finisher and blah, 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 that sort of a thing, and kind of have that background info? Like I say, maybe there's a reason, but Nese went over. Nese acting a little heelish here in the match. I know he slapped, He was came off a little heelish and jealous of Swan in the promo, and then I think he slapped him as he was on the ropes at one point. And so yeah, I mean I think they need heels in the division. Nice is a talented guy, and we'll see where it goes. But Rich Swan is a guy that he came out, he's dancing, he's smiling, he's doing all this stuff, and the crowd just sitting there. Give it time. I think Swan's a guy that is going to start to win over the live crowds. I think the more they see him and just kind of the fun vibe that he brings, I think people are going to get behind his act. Then we got a they moved on. The rest of the world did, but WWE did not. We got a Hispanic Heritage Month video package on Mil Máscaras, and the reason I say we all moved on is because, well, it's no longer Hispanic Heritage Month. It's now it's a National Italian American Heritage Month. I had to look up on some website. I assume there was now a month for so every group got their own month or something. It's also like Employing Disabled People Month or something like that. I don't know that WWE is going to observe Italian American Heritage Month with Bruno Sammartino and Nunzio video packages, but we will see. And going into the break, they did show us Sheamus and Cesaro walking backstage together, just as he did last week. Sheamus cut in front of Cesaro, but then Cesaro kind of ran around some casing and ended up returning the favor to cut in front of him. I don't know, it just a little. I don't know. There's nothing really grabbing me about this. The little squabbles they have and things like this are just kind of lightweight. I still like the idea of putting them together as a team. But I'm actually looking forward to them getting on the same page because so far, the little segments like this, the little bickering things, aren't doing much for me. We're getting a makeover of Emma because they had the makeover of Emma to Emelina will be premiering on Raw soon, according to a video teaser. So good. And she was looked like they were going to do something with her and Dana Brooke as a tag team, and then Emma ended up requiring back surgery, and Dana got moved into a program with. Or being paired with Charlotte. And so I was kind of wondering, oh boy, is Emma just going to fall by the wayside now? And it looks like no, they actually want to do something with her. We'll see what that something is, but I like that they're not just bringing her back cold as Emma. Hey, you remember Emma? She lost a lot. It's not that. Seventh match, it was Sheamus and Cesaro beating Raul White, and I think it was Mark Carradine. I had the subtitles on, and it said Carradine, but I hadn't heard the name Carity before, so I don't think it was that. But yeah, they won. They kind of had issues. There was one cool spot where Cesaro ran and leapt off the back of Sheamus and then performed a DDT onto one of the opponents, and Sheamus wasn't happy about that, but he did put the other one away with the brogue kick. So they're still squabbling, they're still bickering, and you're either into it or you're not. But they win, and again, I'm looking. I know they want to go through this, and hopefully this gets a little more entertaining. And we can kind of get into their squabbles, or they just kind of get to the part where they see the light and, yeah, we are pretty good together. Let's do this. Still don't know if they're baby faces or heels, but we'll see. Oscar De La Hoya statue outside of Staples Centers was shown, and then they cut into the building, and hey, there was the real deal. The boxing legend was sitting at ringside. And then we got a Charlotte and Sasha video package, and I like this. It recapped their history from NXT from a couple years ago, noted their tag team history, and Charlotte said, unfortunately, there's only one title. And then Sasha talked about how she taught Charlotte everything and helped her, and the video package also showed Charlotte retaining the championship at Mania, just kind of going through their back and forth with the championship, then with Sasha beating Charlotte, and then Charlotte regaining the championship at SummerSlam. And then they went to the part where Charlotte and Dana were walking backstage, and then they spotted Bayley, and Charlotte started mocking her, calling her everyone's favorite little sister, and said, one day Bayley will grow up and be a big girl and graduate Camp WWE to be a main eventer. Bayley tried to respond, but Charlotte told her that her title was talking too loud, and she has to go main event. Really good stuff from Charlotte. Charlotte told Brooke it was time to go. And then so Charlotte walks off. Brooke is going to pay for this. If you they haven't played up that they haven't played this up too much lately, the dynamic with Charlotte and Dana, but I think we'll see it next week. I think it's going to be Charlotte blaming Dana for losing the championship because she did tell her let's go, and Brooke just kind of ignored her and ended up mocking Bayley, who ended up Brooke pressed Bayley against the wall, and then Bayley threw her into some sort of a production crate or something, and then Brooke remained on the ground holding her knee in pain. So I can just see Charlotte claiming that. I mean, it could go different number of different directions with it. I think it'd be kind of fun if, after all this, you know, the harassment of Dana that she's done, if she said she was so concerned about her well-being that it was a distraction, you know, something like that, just to lay it on thick and blame Dana for it, for her loss. And then they had Sasha make her entrance, and they went to a commercial, and when they came back, we ended up with the match. But I do want to say, I like what they did with Charlotte talking down to Bayley. I think that's another little thing that you can do that worked well at the NXT level. You wanted to see Bayley finally speak up and stand up for herself, and she did with Dana. She didn't with Charlotte, and I think that's good. I mean, I think the more you can kind of establish Bayley as that underdog and just kind of shy, and you want her to do well as a fan. And I know longtime NXT viewers, they've seen it, they know it. They have to think of the regular Raw viewer who isn't watching all things WWE and doesn't know her from NXT. There's little things. You don't have to start her from scratch, but there's things like this that you can do to kind of get everyone on the same page, slowly but surely letting them know what the Bayley character is, rather than just introducing her as, hey, it's Bayley and she's a star. I was critical of that from the start, and I stand by it. And so I like when they're doing little things like this to kind of get everyone on the same page. The main event itself was Charlotte losing to Sasha Banks. We have a new champion, 14-15. They gave the women's championship match, so Sasha is the Raw women's champion. There was that one clunky spot that I talked about. It was about 8 minutes into the match, I think, and Charlotte swept the legs of Sasha. I think the goal was to kind of catch her and then drive her into the edge of the ring, but Charlotte fell forward and then just kind of awkwardly threw her back in the ring. But it wasn't enough to like take away to, you know, from the match, as far as like it wasn't a major distraction point. They got right back on track, and this was really good. This was one of the better Raw main events we've had in quite some time. They really worked hard. You had Charlotte performing a moonsault at one point. In fact, it was a corkscrew moonsault, and onto Sasha at ringside, and that popped the crowd. Watching it live, I'm like, oh, she kind of missed. Then they showed the replay, and they're showing her in very slow motion doing the corkscrew part, and I'm like, I kind of hope they cut it off so that they don't show that it didn't make contact. Well, they kept it going, and it looked better from that angle, so it worked out just fine. I don't know if it was just kind of my eyes deceived me on that one, or if it's just kind of the angle that the replay came from made it look better, but it looked really good on the replay. But back inside the ring, you had Charlotte performing Natural Selection for a good near fall. I'm not a big fan of the Natural Selection as a finishing move, but still, I mean, it's been established, and so it was a good near fall. Then she starts showing frustration. She slaps Sasha repeatedly, telling her to stay down, and then moments later, you had Sasha catching Charlotte in the bank statement. Charlotte managed to roll it over into a pin briefly, but Sasha rolled her over again, and this time Charlotte had no choice but to tap out. So Sasha goes over, and then after the match, this really helped put things over. This was so effective. Charlotte's in tears, legit tears, and was venting about losing the championship off. You know, she's didn't have a mic in hand or anything. You could just kind of pick up a little bit of what she was saying with the camera mic, but she's facing the big screen just in tears as Sasha's posing with the championship in the ring, and Michael Cole closed the show by saying, ladies and gentlemen, it's boss time. But yeah, those tears are great. I mean, I was critical at NXT. It was like the first Natalya and Charlotte match. They had this great match, and then they hug, and they're both, you know, and Charlotte's tearing up after the match and all of that, and it was cool. It was a genuinely emotional moment. And then as we went forward, it felt like we were starting to get more and more of those character-breaking moments and tears after every women's match that was good on the NXT TakeOver specials. I was like, can you save that for backstage? And I know Triple H has come out since then and said something in one of the media calls that I think it was when Sasha won the title and she got backstage and was very emotional. He's thinking, God, you know, give me that on camera. He likes that real emotion. And I do, too, when it's done like this, when it's the champion or the former champion who's just distraught because she lost her championship, cool. Or the new champion, emotional because she won her championship and she's crying, cool. Same with the men. I mean, you can take the same approach. But it when they break character is what I don't like, and we didn't see that here. One time, when it's just kind of a truly special moment, and it just kind of seems strange when you have these two heated rivals having this great match, and it's really competitive, and they just look like they're out to kill one another during the match, and then the match ends, and suddenly they're all emotional and happy because they had a good match together. I don't want that, and but that's not what this was. This was definitely a Charlotte crying, which makes the loss feel significant, makes the women's championship feel very important. The match was not at all out of place in the main event of Raw, and I hope we see a lot more of this. And I think again, the way they presented it was nice, and I think it wasn't the first time that women have ever headlined. I mean, they'd made reference to Trish and Lita, but still, we don't get this on a regular basis, and I hope we start to get a lot more of it, because they do belong in that main event position. And now, I guess the big wait is when do they headline with the women? When do they headline a pay-per-view with the women? And I'm a big, I know, but people really want to see that at some point. I do too. I want to see it done like this, where it just feels like the time is right. Not that WWE is trying to make a statement by doing it and forcing it to happen. Let it happen naturally. You'll know when the time is right. And I don't think we're that far off, really. I mean, I'm enjoying a lot what the women have done, more than what I've seen in the main event picture a lot of times so far on Raw. So I don't think they're far away from it, but I want that to be a genuine mo a moment, one that just feels like now's the time. Kind of like what you saw when it happened in NXT, and people were so excited by it. And it wasn't forced into that position. The fans wanted it. The fans accepted it. The fans craved it. And let that happen with the women on the main roster too, and things will be just fine. So overall, a pretty good, a strong main event, and an overall pretty good show. I thought it was a solid addition. It's still, 3 hours is too long. It's always going to be. But I like some of what we're seeing here. I don't know what they're doing with Titus, but he's got a new character. And I mentioned that just because, all of a sudden they're going to reintroduce Emma with something. And you've got Sheamus and Cesaro, who've just kind of been wasting away. They've got their little thing going. You have Braun Strowman now ready to move on from squash matches. So there's little things they're doing with some of the, I don't know if you want to call them all undercard talent, but just guys that aren't in the main event picture, where it doesn't feel like it's just all about Roman Reigns, Seth Rollins, Kevin Owens, and everyone else be damned. There's a lot more going on than that. They're doing slowly but surely. I think they're doing good work with the cruiserweights. It's I could do without the handshakes before and after the match. I don't need the cruiserweight division to be, do the code of honor. It's fine when Ring of Honor does it, but why do the cruiserweights do it and we don't see that in any of the other matches? That's kind of corny to me, and so I kind of hope they scrap that. But I just think, they filled the time pretty well last night. They obviously get excited when they go into a big market like Los Angeles, and hopefully that will continue when they leave the big market. They've got to do something here to get Raw clicking again. We'll see what type of number it does later today. The Raw viewership and ratings information should be available, and it'll be interesting because, there was no presidential debate, so you would think the number would go up, but they were going against the New York Giants football team facing my Minnesota Vikings, and the Vikings were undefeated going into it. And of course, the big draw is the fact that it's a big, New York sports team. So it's a New York team, New York Giants facing an undefeated team, and the Giants have played pretty well this year too. So not a massive showdown game, but still an attractive game. And we'll see how it how Raw held up, just looking forward to now seeing where things go from here, we know that Rusev and Reigns are going to go at it in a Hell in a Cell structure, and I think they're going to have more than one Hell in a Cell match, but we need to see the rest of the card get filled out, and I assume that's really going to kick in heavily beginning next week, once we get through SmackDown's No Mercy show on Sunday. Yes, there is another pay-per-view on Sunday. And as always, if you want to enjoy ad-free access to ProWrestling.net for the pay-per-view and every day, you can sign up for .net membership. Again, the ad-free version of our site, and you get access to all of our audio content. If you kind of enjoy this longer-form audio review of Raw that I give you guys once in a while here on the All Access side, know that it is available each and every week for .NET members, along with full-length audio reviews of SmackDown, NXT, TNA Impact Wrestling, Ring of Honor, all the major pay-per-view events. In fact, over the weekend, I just covered the TNA Bound for Glory show. Got about a 50-minute audio review. Ring of Honor, I don't remember the time, but it was certainly north of 30. I'm underestimating here, but I think it was probably closer to 40 minutes on that. I'm not quite sure, but full-length audio reviews of all the major shows, Lucha Underground as well. I almost let them slip. John Moore is doing the weekly Lucha Underground audio reviews. So sometimes you guys hear those here on the All Access side. But know that they are available every single show for .NET members. If you are interested in membership to the, again, ad-free version of the site, visit the main page of ProWrestling.net. Once you are in there, you can see the sign-up area, and there'll be three different pricing options to choose from. $7.50 will get you in the door for 1 month, but if you want to take advantage of the extended membership options, you can save yourself some money. There's a six-month plan that'll whittle that price down a little bit, and then the annual price brings the average down to $5.50 per month, so you're saving $2 a month by going annual. Again, all the details available at ProWrestling.net. If you have any questions, hit me up on Twitter at ProWrestlingNet or shoot me an email, dotnetjason. .NetJason@gmail.com. That is going to do it for today, everybody. I think I'll be back tomorrow in this slot. Not official yet, but guessing I will be back tomorrow in this slot. And then later in the week, we'll turn things over to some of the other guys for some reviews. If you're wondering, hey, where's the Pretentious Wrestling Podcast? Will is on vacation this week, and he has a hellacious month of work, he said. So we may not be getting Pretentious Wrestling Podcasts. However, his co-host of that show, Jake Barnett, will be joining me for some of the All Access shows as well. So looking forward to getting together with Jake. Until next time, take care.